G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
realfaith.org.au.
Look, I'm married to a woman who looks at things and said, this is terrible, I should do something about it. I'm going to do something about it. I look at the same thing and tend to go, well, you know, it's terrible, somebody should do something. So I don't get off the hook.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, last time we spoke with Joan Grosser from Perth about the wonderful ministry that she's been involved in for several years over in India. It's a hospice which takes care of terminally ill people. We were just about to end when she wanted to tell a story about mangoes. So we ran out of time to tell it last time. Now we're going to begin with Joan telling the mango story. Joan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Glad to have you with us. And what was this mango story that you were so anxious to tell me about?
How God links things together. Mm-hmm. We were in Kununurra in Western Australia, right up the very top, doing a parenting program. For 30 years, we've been teaching people how to raise godly children. Mm-hmm. And this guy came along to this meeting we were having, and he didn't want to be there. He was a bit angry about it, but his wife sort of forced him to. When he walked in, we knew God had put his hand on him. And 2 weeks later, he became a Christian and handed his life over to the Lord. Mm. And then he rang us up and he said, look, I've got 800 mango trees, and I'm wondering if I could send you down 100 boxes of mangoes to sell the money for that thing you do in India. And we said, sure, we'll sell them. So the first year, we made about $5,000-$6,000 from the mangoes. Second year, he sent us 200 boxes. And then the third year, he said, look, I won't be able to do any mangoes this year because my wife's not well and we won't be able to pick them. And I said, what will happen to the mangoes? He said, well, they'll just drop on the ground. So I said, well, if we can bring a team up to pick them, can we have them? And he said, yes. So from then, we've had the mango story. And every year, we've raised, 2 years ago, we raised $100,000 just through picking mangoes. But the beauty of it is we take up a team of young people and older people who give their time to do this totally free of charge, and they work in 40-degree heat picking mangoes from 5 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we sell those mangoes all over Western Australia, and we raise the money to support the hospice. It's just been an amazing thing because it's drawn so many people into understanding about the work of the hospice, but also in Kununurra, the relationships we've made there have been very, very special. So that's our mango story.
Wow.
So, yeah, so the people in India know that we sweat like crazy to get money for their hospice. When the young people get to Kununurra, the first devotion we do comes from Isaiah chapter 58, which talks about true fast. What is the true fast? And he says it's not just stopping eating chocolate at Easter or something or other. Mm-hmm. He says this is caring for the widows and those in distress. And so I say to those young people, this is your true fast. Coming up here, picking mangoes in the sweating heat, so that you can help people who are in great need. Mm-hmm. And so our mango story continues, and we don't have to go out looking for people to help. They come willingly year after year, and they can be as young as 13 years of age, but they give their time willingly, and they get involved with Rumah Abadona Hospice.
Fantastic. Picking mango is for the Lord.
Yes.
Or I should say for the Lord's work, because then this money helps to finance the hospice in India, which you talked about last time, which is being with people, comforting them in their final days when they're dying from a terminal illness.
Yes. Yes. And the money's done things like buy two cars because they go out in teams to the home and care for the people in their home mm-hmm. in just a beautiful way. They have a team of four people, a registered nurse, a counsellor, a person who does massage and dressings, and a person who drives the car. It's just, when I look at it, it's just an amazing thing. Mm. Something caring and compassion such as I rarely ever see.
So this ministry is ministering to these poor people who have terminal illnesses.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a wonderful ministry. Well, thank you so much for sharing about that. Now we want to hear from your husband, Bill, and hear his side of the story. Can you hand the phone over to Bill?
I will hand the phone over to Bill, and he'll give you another side of it. Okay,
that's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
G'day, Bill here. I don't know which other side I'm going to give you, but I'll give you something.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We heard last time that your dad and Joan's dad knew each other from before you were even born.
That's right. They met when my dad was about 19 or 20, I think, and became firm friends, and he was best man at Dad's wedding. So Joan and I have known each other all her life.
Yeah. So you were 4 years old when Joan was born.
That's right. So I'm 82 right now, and she's 78, and we've still got her favorite verse in the Bible is, "I will run to my grave with vigor." Job 5:26.
So you guys grew up together, were good friends. When did it become romantic? When did you become a couple?
You know, we were a bit sweet on each other when we were younger, but it wasn't until Joan was 16 that I plucked up the courage to say to her father, "Can I take her out?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Yes, but you will have her home at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Don't come back here anytime soon and say, 'Can you marry her?' Because the answer is no already."
Oh.
So that's where how it all started, on the tennis court. I think Joan probably mentioned that it started on the tennis court, ended in a love set, but we went to juice quite a few times. We broke up, and it was all to do with our walk with God that needed to get things straight.
Hmm. So both of you were young Christians at that time,
yes,
as you were teenagers?
Yes, we were. Joan was 16, I was 20. It was the same year, actually. We both really surrendered to God, but we had a lot of learning to do.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually you married?
We married, 7 years after I started taking her out in 1965. And, finally got her down the aisle.
Hmm. All righty. And then, just 3 months after you were married, you were challenged to go to India as missionaries.
That's right. Joan was already pregnant, and mm-hmm. We couldn't see that that would even be a possibility with everything I think Joan mentioned about we'd bought a house and I was running a business and we were in a thriving church, and it didn't seem like even a possibility. But there you go. After 18 months of marriage, we found ourselves in Madras, as it was then, with a team of 10.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that was in 1966?
1966 is correct. Mm-hmm. And in 67, we transferred to lead a new team in Calcutta, leaving the old team behind in Madras.
And you served there for 2 years?
Well, it was a bit over 2 years. And at the end of that, Joan ran a missionary guest house down on the Nilgiri Hills for mm-hmm. a season. So we had a bit over 3 years in India altogether.
Now, Joan shared that you kind of started a love affair with India. You just fell in love with the people. Is that right? Was that the case for you as
yes.
well?
Yes. Yes, and people say to us now, you know, why do you go to Calcutta for a holiday? And
yeah, that's not the usual destination.
No, it's certainly not. And you wouldn't want to go there for a holiday, but it's the people that draw us back. And particularly, our love affair is particularly with Bengalis, mm-hmm. who I describe as like the Italians of India. They're very expressive. Mm-hmm. Things can flare up pretty quick, but they're very hospitable, and we just love being with them. Mm-hmm. And they've got a good sense of humor, too, which suits me.
Yeah, so you served there as missionaries for 3 years, but then you came to the realization that you could serve them better by supporting the local people doing ministry.
That is true. Mm-hmm. because we recognised that it wouldn't matter how long we stayed there, and we had worked with missionaries who'd been there a long time.
Yeah.
We would never fully understand the culture.
Mm-hmm.
My Bengali is sparse, but I get by. But
yeah.
It's not good enough to really deeply disciple people. So our slant was to come home, support some people. In fact, they were new believers, really. Guy Sunil had given his heart to the Lord through a previous crusade in Calcutta where he brought a gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we supported them for the next, well, until they died, actually.
Mm. So you've been involved in helping people in ministry in India for over 50 years.
That is right. And we feel that's a real blessing. Look, it's very interesting. I'm a bricklayer. Joan's a nurse. We mm-hmm. don't. We're not one of the big people who knows everything. We just know that God's called us to love Him
mm-hmm.
and to love others, and we do that in the best way that we know how, albeit sometimes faltering.
Mm-hmm.
And God gets the glory for anything that has transpired as a result of that.
Our guest today is Bill Grosser, and before that we heard from his wife Joan. They're sharing their story of service to the Lord both in India and here in Australia. We're going to hear more of their story when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scatabo, and our guest today is Bill Grosser. He's sharing his story and also the story of his wife, Joan. Together, they have served many people both in India and here in Australia. Actually, they do much of the ministry here in Australia to support the work at the hospice back in India. But that is just the beginning of the story. They serve in so many other ways. We'll hear more of their story now as Bill continues.
Look, I'm married to a woman who looks at things and said, this is terrible, I should do something about it. I'm going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the same thing and tend to go, well, you know, it's terrible, somebody should do something. I don't get off the hook because, you know, she came home one day and said, I came home from work. I was teaching at TAFE.
Uh-huh.
And she was really discouraged by what was happening in the school our children were in. She said, I want to start a Christian school in Midland. And that resulted in a new school, Midland Christian School, opening about 8 months later, I think, that opened its doors. And then the following year was a high school, and the next year was another primary school, and the next year was two pre-primary centres, and they were all staffed by believers and had a Christian influence on kids.
Wow. So look out when she gets a heart for something.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't just get dragged along in the wake. I'm part of it.
Yeah,
but the vision normally, not always, but normally will start with her.
Mm-hmm. Tell us some of the other ministries that you've been involved in here in Australia.
The parenting ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I was pastoring a church and got sent to US for a church growth seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're there, we found parenting material, which we figured may work in our church. So we brought it home and started using it, and people started hearing about it. And that eventually took over our lives for a period of time. And it spread all over Australia. And then we had the opportunity to take it to Singapore and over to Africa, South Africa and Zimbabwe. And, so it's been pretty exciting. And it's not one of those things that we could have engineered. We see it very much as God did it.
Yeah.
We just were the tools he chose to use for at that time.
So in 1996, you founded a ministry called Growing Families Australia. So Christian
That's
parenting.
Correct. Yes.
And it's gone from Australia to other parts of the world. That's wonderful.
It has, yes. The original material was from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
We've modified some of that, and as recent as 10 years ago, started developing it for the Aboriginals for the Kimberley region.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things eventually need to be handed over to others. We don't mm-hmm. sort of start something and then saying, this is ours.
Yeah.
We want to hand things on so that God's word and God's work is done by other people. So that was an exciting project that came out of seeing a need for Aboriginal families to have something to, if you like, get their teeth into in parenting.
Mm-hmm. So parenting from a Christian perspective in a godly, biblical way.
That's correct, yes. Yes, without it being Western or European, because mm-hmm. Both in India and here, we've seen that that actually doesn't work that well.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with Aboriginal people, and we had some really strong Aboriginal people who were able to look us in the eye and say, no, that's not going to work, you can't do that.
Mm.
And we were able to hear their message, which has been quite brilliant, really.
Wow. Now, looking back over your over 50 years of service in various types of Christian ministries, both in India and here in Australia, what was one of the most fulfilling things that you've been a part of over the years?
You know, I find that a difficult question to answer because so much of it has been fulfilling.
Hmm.
But probably the most has been the work with the hospice,
mm-hmm.
in that we are working entirely with people who were pre-Christian.
Mm-hmm.
All of the workers in the hospice are new believers or people who are coming to faith.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been extremely fulfilling. But I could go through each of the ministries and say, you know what, that was absolutely brilliant what God did. I mean, the school was just a stunning thing to go from nothing in 5 months from when the dream came or the vision came to the school opening. And there was 58 kids at the end of the first term, 78. And then the next year, that school had 180 and the high school started with 70 or 80 kids. And the next year, another primary. And it was just seeing God's people from a whole range of denominational backgrounds to working together for a common cause, to see men who in their churches often felt that they were pretty useless, but in the school they could do brick paving or gardening or work with their hands, and that's what men need to do. And so working shoulder to shoulder with men, they often opened their hearts and eventually gave their hearts to Christ if they weren't already believers.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I guess that's a long answer to a short question, but the reality is that everything has been fulfilling. You know, with the parenting ministry now, we're engaging with young people who grew up in growing families, if you like, growing families homes from a range of denominations. And they are saying, we want to bring our kids up the way we were brought up with, which is probably different from the norm where kids spend a lot of time complaining about what their parents did.
And
a lot of those are engaged with us in other ministries that we're involved in, like the hospice.
So it sounds like there's this overall theme of see a need, meet a need, see a need, meet a need. And so you saw a need in India, so you were supportive there. You saw a need for parenting skills, so you started that ministry, saw a need for a school.
Yes.
You probably won't want your wife to be looking around too much anymore because you might find another need somewhere.
She's looking around already, don't worry. you know, when I was a young fella at Bible college, one of the things was the need does not constitute the call, and I buy that.
Mm.
But on the other hand, if there is no need, there probably will not be a call.
Mm.
And so we see many other needs, but we are not equipped, or we do not have the capacity or the headspace or the heart or whatever it is to actually fulfill that need. So
yeah.
I think doing what we do is probably all that we can do at this point.
Now, you had a decision to make when you were married for just 3 months. You could have just had that comfortable life as a bricklayer, but you chose the path, very uncomfortable, of going to India and starting all these ministries. Do you have any regrets for the path that you chose?
No regrets at all. It's funny, you know, when I was a kid at school, I was doing very well academically, but I wanted to become a bricklayer.
Hmm.
And I was called into the principal's office, Mr. Glue, and he said, "Son, you will regret this decision." And I jokingly say these days, I probably will one day, but it hasn't come yet. And becoming a bricklayer was... I'm so glad I did that before I went into any real ministry, because it's given me a practical aspect to life and the ability to relate to men who otherwise may look at me and say, "Oh, you're just a preacher. That's what you're supposed to say."
Yeah.
So no regret about that. Was it scary? Yes. I mean, you've been on a good income, and suddenly you're dependent on God to supply your needs.
Mm-hmm.
And things like a butcher turned up on our doorstep before we left for India, well before, with half a sheep all cut up, and he wanted to give that to us to support us. And Joan was saying, "Well, you know what? Bill's earning good money. We don't need this." And he just looked at her and he said, "Joan, do not rob me of the joy of giving. I want to be part in this with you." And that was our introduction to receiving physical stuff or financial stuff from God so that we could engage in the ministry. There were many scary times, and yet God has been faithful.
Any final story you want to leave our listeners with today?
Can I say that what I think what a lot of Christians miss is that other people have a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were leaving Madras to go to Calcutta, the church that we're at called us out to the front and presented us with an elephant. And we still have that. And they said to us, "You know, this is the first time that we have had foreigners as part of our church who we felt were one of us."
Mm.
And I said, "So what makes you..." I said, "That's a great compliment, but what makes you feel that?" And they said, "Oh, we've talked about that. You joked with us.
Hmm.
That's what we... You teased us. That's what we do to each other. And we just felt you're one of us." And I think, you know, that's been a sort of a hallmark. I am a bit of a clown. I like to mess around.
But, I mean, you have to be real and get to know people.
Yes.
And humor is a gift from God.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It, as the old... saying goes, it's the best medicine, and it also breaks down a lot of barriers.
Yep. So with humor and with the rich giving and being blessed by people in India and also in Australia, it sounds like you've had a pretty rich and fulfilling life.
I would say so, very loud and clear. Other people may think that we've been, you know, silly in some ways. We haven't ended up life rich. Our kids won't get a great inheritance from us. They've got more money than we've got, actually. But Joan's dad said to us once, "You know, why would you want God to reward you for what you leave to him when you no longer have any use for it?" He said, "Give to God and his work while you're alive." And he could have been a very rich man, but when he passed away, most of his money had gone into Christian work long before. And the last $20,000 actually bought the land for the hospice. And I don't think everyone should do what we did. There are very good reasons why people accumulate funds to actually give to God's work. And I'm grateful for those, because in the works that we're involved in, we are beneficiaries of that. But if you look at what we've done in a purely physical way, we haven't been very smart. But if you look at it from God's perspective, hopefully he says, you know what, I'm glad you did that because you did it as unto me.
Amen. Mm. And your reward in heaven will be plentiful.
You know, that's a great statement. I think the reward that we have already is just brilliant. So if we got no more than the smile of the Master, that would be reward enough.
Amen. Well put. Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you so much.
Our guests today have been Bill Grosser, and before that we heard from his wife, Joan. And together they've been involved in many ministries, but the main ministry that we want to let people know about is the hospice in India that they're involved in. And to learn more about that hospice, you can go to the website, rumahospice.org. That's Ruma, R-U-M-A, hospice.org.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.